Hi, I'm Tony Rossi for the Christophers, and if you've ever been skeptical about the existence of God, my guest today can relate. Jennifer Fulweiler was raised an atheist and thought that reasonable, scientifically-minded people couldn't possibly believe in God. But when Jennifer started looking into the logic of faith, she came to a different conclusion and ultimately converted to Catholicism. We're going to talk about her spiritual journey today, so stay with us. Christopher Close-Up starts right now. Hello and welcome to Christopher Close-Up. I'm Tony Rossi, and my guest today is Jennifer Fulweiler. A number of years ago, Jennifer was living a pretty good life in material terms. She had a good job, just got married to a successful man, and enjoyed the finer things in life in her 21st floor condo in Austin, Texas. But Jennifer had been raised an atheist, and she'd been plagued for years by a spiritual emptiness, a fear that life was ultimately meaningless. That's when she started investigating Christianity, a religion she had rejected a long time ago. The answers she found took her on a faith journey that she chronicles in the book, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. To tell us more, I'm pleased to welcome to Christopher Close-Up, Jennifer Fulweiler. Jennifer, thanks so much for being on the show today.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now this book chronicles your life move from atheism to the Catholic Church, and I was really struck by the story you used at the beginning of the book. You're at this camp, and this counselor really tries to force you to accept Jesus as your savior. And I have to say, the whole incident made me uncomfortable. What is your take on that incident, looking back at it all these years later?
My take on it is that it was such an unfortunate miscommunication, because I think that those were well-meaning people. They loved Jesus, and they wanted people to know Jesus. But I think that this was in a place and time, this was the late 80s, and they had not really encountered atheists yet. This was before it was really okay for people to even admit that they were atheists.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there was actually a real potential for evangelization there, because I think they truly did love the Lord and were trying to do the right thing, but they didn't know how to speak to me in a language that I could understand, and they didn't know just how little I knew about their belief system.
Right. Yeah, I was struck by that too. Like, how do you expect someone to accept Jesus if they really know nothing about him?
Right. Yeah. I think it would have never occurred to them that someone living in the Bible Belt could know nothing about Jesus.
Yeah. And the other thing that struck me, too, is that they really were preaching to you about hell. And, I mean, when is the right and wrong time to play the hell card with a non-believer, do you think?
You know, with a non-believer, I think you want to ease into that one, because for people who don't believe, usually they also don't exactly have these concepts of sin in the same way that Christians do. They tend to believe in right and wrong, but the idea of, you know, if what I believe is right doesn't match with what some God believes, I'm going to burn in hell. That's very confusing, and that is an area that is rife for miscommunication. So I usually say, let's put the discussion of hell aside and circle back to that once we establish who God is and who Jesus is, and we'll get back to the hell thing.
Yeah, God's love and mercy might be the better entry point for people.
It is. It's a great conversation starter.
I'm talking to Jennifer Fulweiler about her book, Something Other Than God. Now, the other thing that struck me, too, is your dad's reaction to all this when he heard about it. It was pretty, I guess, mellow by modern angry atheist standards. Your dad seemed to be more mellow about the whole thing. Are atheists just more mellow in Texas, or is your dad just more mellow overall?
But my dad is a really mellow guy, definitely. He is a type of atheist, and I know many atheists like him. I know more atheists like him than I do the angry vocal types. That he's more of a philosopher, I guess you could say, that he has these beliefs and he feels strongly about them, but he would consider it rude to get up in someone's face about his beliefs, just as he thought it was rude for the Christians to get up in my face.
Right.
And I knew many, many atheists growing up. And those were the kind of atheists that were in my social circle.
Right, right. And I remember seeing your dad on the reality show you did briefly. And again, he gave that very kind, loving demeanor, came across on camera. And he was fairly humble, too.
Yes, He's a really wonderful, humble man. And I often say that he was one of my biggest influences in converting to Catholicism because of his humility and his selfless love. And then also what he always taught me was to seek truth above all, mm-hmm. even if it's inconvenient, even if you don't like the conclusions you come to, you have to always be focused on what is true. And so that combination of things really set me up directly for a conversion to Catholicism.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, during the encounter when he's talking to you, he taught you to question everything, which is a good thing, because a lot of people think once you become Christian or Catholic, you check your brain at the door. But it's
right.
actually the complete opposite. There's a lot of questions to ask, and it's okay to ask questions.
That was one of the things that was so thrilling to me about Catholicism is I thought that being in atheistic social circles, there was a lot of intellectual excitement, a lot of big questions and great philosophies to take apart and things like that. And I did know plenty of smart atheists, but when I encountered Catholicism, I one time analogized it to saying it was like being at an intellectual all-you-can-eat buffet. It was suddenly like there were some smart atheists and we talked about interesting things. But it was nothing compared to talking to Catholics because they had 2,000 years of wisdom. And in fact, even going back before, you know, to the Jewish wisdom, mm-hmm. they had thousands and thousands of years of wisdom at their disposal. And my husband and I both were just amazed by the intellectual feast that we encountered in Catholicism.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Jennifer Fulweiler about her book, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. Now, most people don't confront their own mortality until they're, I think, like 30 or 40. You did it when you were 11 in this incident at your grandparents' land in Texas. Now, the idea of death can shake an adult. How did you handle it as a kid?
Well, not well. It's a lot for a seven-year-old to try to comprehend. And it was really more than I could even think about it. I think as I wrote about in the book, I was just kind of stunned and didn't know how I was supposed to move forward with just living and being a happy person in light of this knowledge. And it was something that would plague me for years. And honestly, I just kind of did my best to forget about it because I didn't know what to make of it.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, do you think being a believer would have made it easier? Or it's just, I mean, I guess at that age, encountering death, thinking about death, even as adults, we find it difficult. So,
I think it would have been easier if I had been a believer to know that there's something eternal, that we're not confined to the material world. I definitely think that would have made it a much more palatable idea.
Right, right. Now, maybe this is the English major in me overanalyzing something, but when I was reading that incident, these are the things that struck me. Is you're driving, after you have this epiphany about death, you're driving your dad's truck back to your grandparents' farm, and you have to enter through the narrow gate, and then a snake gets in your way, and then it leads to you eventually, making moments of fun paramount in your search for happiness. Was that imagery intentional, or did it all just kind of work out that way?
No, Tony, that's so interesting. It was not intentional at all. And so, wow, it's funny. You know, one of the great things about having this book out is that people are coming to me saying, look at how God worked in your life at this moment. Look at this symbolism. And I didn't even see it. I was just writing what happened. And other people are helping me find the meaning in my own story. And that's a great example. That's so fascinating.
So you're still growing, even though you've converted. You're still growing and maturing as a Catholic, right?
Oh, every day. Every day is a new struggle, a new chance to just try to start over and do my best.
I'm talking to Jennifer Fulweiler. Her book is called Something Other Than God, and her website is conversiondiary.com. Now, it's said in Catholic circles that if you don't make the big G God your God in your life, you'll have little G gods in his place. When you were drawn by things that you write about in the book, like money and status, did you ever think of them as kind of gods in your life, or that reality didn't hit until you started the whole investigating Christianity process?
Great question. No, I didn't think of it that way because I was really steeped in this culture where that was simply what you did to have a good life. In a way, I felt like I was following a certain moral code or prescription for living given to me by my society, that if you want to have a good life, you make sure you don't have too many kids, for goodness sake. And then, you know, you get as much money as you can, and you decide the lifestyle you want to live. And I didn't really question it that much in a way, because I just took it for granted that that is what it means to be a responsible adult with a good life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now that you've got all these years of experience, how has, I mean, in a way, you're living a much more self-sacrificial life now, but yet you find yourself happier. So how do you explain that process to someone who doesn't buy it? I mean, do they have to go through it themselves, or?
I think they either have to go through it themselves or get a good glimpse of our lives. What one interesting thing is that people often ask what impact our conversion has had on our parents. And our parents are definitely fascinated and interested and very respectful of Catholicism, because when we first made all these changes and we left the fancy lifestyle and we suddenly had all of these problems and all of these crosses that we didn't have before, and to this day, I mean, we struggle so much more than we did when we were living our worldly, secular lives. And yet our lives are bursting with life and with love and with joy. And I think that when people see that, on the one hand, they're afraid of maybe making some of the sacrifices we've made, but they say, you know, I've got to admit, the Fulwilers are so much happier than when they were living downtown and driving the Jaguar. And so it's definitely, I think it's definitely a scary proposition to non-believers when I say my life is 10 times harder now than it was when I was an atheist. And I think it is maybe sometimes hard for them to believe the truth that it might be 10 times harder, but it is infinitely more joyful.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you kept referring to we in that example, because even though this book is the story of your conversion, it's really also the story of Joe's conversion too, because he was kind of a vague believer in the beginning. How do you think having that other person kind of go through that slow road to meaningful belief impacted your own faith journey?
Oh, it's inestimable. I'm sure that God sent Joe my way just to help me, because, you know, as I say in the book, Joe has this background of, he went to Yale undergrad, Columbia Law School, Stanford Business School, studied in the master's computer science program at Stanford. So for somebody like me, who was really afraid of this idea that you mentioned earlier of checking my brain at the door, you know, once I converted, having my husband along and agreeing with me, saying, no, this is the most intellectually honest belief system in the world. This moral code is perfectly consistent. This church is full of wisdom. If it hadn't been for him, I think I might have wondered if I was just losing my mind. but to have my very intelligent, very sane husband along for the ride, who, by the way, as I said in the beginning of the book, was very anti-Catholic. Mm-hmm. So to have him go along this journey with me really helped me stay the course when the going got tough.
Yeah, I underlined the sentence that he once wanted to write on your blog, that Catholicism is a corrupt belief system that is not true Christianity. So right. Readers can know that he's not just, you know, coming along for the ride. He's thinking about this.
You know what's funny is he said a few other things, too, that I wrote in an early draft. And Joe struck it and said, you can't tell people I said that.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I'm talking to Jennifer Fulwiler. Her book is called Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. One of the other misconceptions that I love that you dispel in the book is this idea that faith and science are incompatible. Now, coming from your current point of view, why do you think faith and science are more complementary than contradictory?
Oh, what a great question. I mean, first of all, if you look at the history of the university system, I mean, it was founded by Catholics. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the way I look at it, the Catholic worldview, it puts everything in its proper place, including science. One of the things I noticed when I began dialoguing with Catholics is they knew more about science than the atheists I knew, yet they put science in its proper place. For example, if we're talking about the question of why does something exist instead of nothing? What happened before the Big Bang? Those sorts of questions, those are not questions that science can answer. Science mm-hmm. is not a discipline that was meant to answer those questions. That's when you start getting into philosophy and the other disciplines. And we live in this culture that thinks science has the answer for everything. You know,
yeah.
If you ask the question, like, why did that piece of music move me? Science can speak to the chemical reactions in your brain, but it can't really go to the root of that mm-hmm. question. And so to me, this Catholic worldview feels so much more sane that it respects science, but it respects science in concert with the other disciplines like philosophy, so that you have that balance and each area is answering the questions that it is meant to answer.
Yeah. So has the scientifically minded Jennifer Fulweiler made peace with mystery?
Yes. I'm slowly getting there.
You still want answers to everything, but...
I do. It's hard.
Well, you know, we're just talking science is grounded in material reality. But when I think of human progress through the years, it tends to be shaped by these intangible forces like faith, hope, and love. Right. Would the power of those intangibles hold any sway in an argument with a non-believer, do you think?
I think that they would see it like, I believe in faith, hope, and love, too. I think that that's where the waters get kind of muddied, because I think they would say, yeah, we believe in those things, too, but you don't have to have a God to believe in, or at least hope and love.
Right. No, I was thinking, because I think a lot of people think of those things as feelings, whereas I'm kind of coming at them as, like, they're a force to be reckoned with when you really think about it, especially love, which I know you write about in the book about, really, it seemed like giving birth to your first child. That was the watershed moment, I think, that made you think that love is eternal, right?
Yes, exactly. That's when I had that paradigm shift of, instead of thinking of love as something you can measure on an MRI scan of your brain or whatever, mm-hmm. that suddenly I realized that it does have, it's rooted in the eternal.
Right. I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close Up. I'm talking to Jennifer Fulweiler about her book, Something Other Than God. One of my favorite parts is when you're writing about C.S. Lewis. You say that his presentation of God was, quote, more interesting than the caricature of God you'd always imagined. And I think Christians actually sometimes also believe in a caricature of God as, you know, sending down lightning strikes to non-believers and you know, like a
right.
sky bully the atheists have. How did your vision of God change once you started investigating Catholicism?
Well, that's a great question. You mentioned mystery earlier, and one of the things I had to let go of was this idea that I could completely understand God. Mm-hmm. Because given my background, the idea of committing my life to this being and being told I could never wrap my mind around what or who he is, I thought, you know, well, wait a minute, what am I getting myself into here? And so, yeah, I used to think of God as, you know, the white bearded man throwing down lightning bolts while he was sitting on a cloud. And what I came to see when I read the great Catholic thinkers of throughout the ages was this much more mystical, much more impenetrable concept. And it was daunting, but it was also thrilling in a way. And one of the things that sometimes comes up is, atheists will, you know, I was stargazing with an atheist a while back, and he pointed at the sky and said, look at how small Earth is in the grand scheme of the universe. How does that really even make sense that God would create life on this one obscure planet? Mm-hmm. And I thought that speaks to me of the greatness of God, that, you know, we have this whole universe out there that he created, and we're just on one small speck of it. And that helps remind me that God is so much bigger than we could ever comprehend.
Right. Do you think part of the problem, both, again, with say, atheists and fundamentalists, is that they don't really understand how to read the Bible, which was written for Jewish audiences thousands of years ago?
Right. I think it's funny that sometimes atheists and fundamentalists remind me of each other in the sense that they both miss the big picture. They have individual components that are right, but they're not taking a step back and seeing the big picture. And I hear that all the time when I'm dialoguing with atheists. They'll take one line from the Old Testament and say, look, isn't this ridiculous? You guys believe this stuff. And I just kind of smack my head and say, oh, where do I begin? That's not how I'm supposed to read the Bible. You know?
And does it have any effect? I mean, do you dialogue with atheists on conversiondiary.com? Do you hear from them who actually want to engage in dialogue as opposed to, you know, just the haters who show up at these kinds of websites?
I do. If someone, just because my time is so limited, I try to be kind to everyone. But if someone just seems like they're venting, I don't really dialogue with that because they're obviously not in a place of readiness to hear anything other than what they already believe. Mm-hmm. But if someone seems to be sincerely seeking, I do try to answer their questions and mainly there's so many amazing resources out there. I try to have a good collection of resources that I can point them to that might help them along.
Sure, sure. Now, we were talking C.S. Lewis before. One of my favorite books of his is The Great Divorce. And I like the way he kind of portrays heaven in that book as being this just, it's not it's like something other. It's just everything is more real than we can possibly imagine. And when I was reading that originally, when I first read the book, I thought of the Karl Marx quote about religion being opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think religion is what makes life more real, not less real. How have you seen your religion make your life more real?
Yeah, it's funny. I just finished The Great Divorce, and I, too, was fascinated by this idea that in heaven people are more solid mm-hmm. than they are on earth or certainly in hell. That was amazing to me. And one of the things I say when people ask if my life is better now that I'm Catholic, I say it depends on how you measure better, because like I said earlier, I have a lot of new problems now, and I think my life is more difficult in some ways, you know, trying to walk through that narrow gate, pick up my cross, that kind of thing. It's, mm-hmm. it's not always easy. But I feel like my life has started now. Like you said, it feels like my life was not a real life before. It was just so hollow and so empty, and it wasn't really going anywhere that had real significance. And so, yeah, my life, I it feels like I am finally living a life now that I'm Catholic.
Well, now, I'm passing on this faith to your kids. Is that something you do by example, through instruction? How are you doing it to make them, you know, so it's not just something they follow now, but that sticks with them as they get older?
You know, that's one of my biggest struggles, because neither my husband nor I grew up in anything even close to a Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've never seen it modeled for ourselves. So I feel like I'm just kind of adrift in this effort, and especially in this age of social media where it seems like everyone prays the family rosary every single night and they never miss it. I feel like, oh my gosh, I'm failing and all my kids are going to be atheists. But, you know, I think that they see my husband and I every day making real sacrifices mm-hmm. for what we believe, that, you know, we're not just talking about God, but we, you know, when the chips are down and things really matter, we really are turning to God. And I hope that they see that. And our examples are not always perfect. We are certainly not the perfect Catholics,
mm-hmm.
but I hope that they see that God is very real in our lives, and we are really trying to follow him as best we can.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned the families who pray the family rosary. One of the things I liked about the book is that two of your biggest prayer moments in the book take place in a bathroom, which is not a place you would expect prayer. But I think it's perfect because, you know, it shows we can pray anytime, anywhere. Do you integrate prayer into your life in that way, like you talk to God anytime, anywhere?
I do. And that, you know, as a mother of six young children, it's hard for me to get that quiet hour a day that I would like to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do try to just throw up prayers throughout the day, like, Lord, help me. So a lot of times that's mainly what my prayer life looks like.
Right, right. Now, I'm always interested in the people to whom authors dedicate their books. And yours is dedicated to Papa, who always believed. So tell me a little bit about Papa and why he made the dedication here.
Well, he is so wonderful. He was born in 1914, and my book was released in 2014, and he's still with us. He just turned 100 in May.
God bless him.
And my grandfather is this amazing guy. Everyone who meets him says that he's just the favorite person they've ever met. He's very intelligent. He was an engineer. He lived in Mexico for most of his life, working on refineries down there. Just a really interesting guy. But if he met you, he would only want to ask questions about you, and you would feel like you were the most interesting person he'd ever encountered. He's just one of those great people that way. And he was never an atheist. He was not particularly religious, but he was never an atheist, and he always believed in, I think he even considers himself a Christian in some sense of the word, but he is definitely a theist.
Okay.
And that always made an impression on me, that he's so intelligent, and yet I knew that he believed in God. So when I was an atheist, that made a big impression on me. And the other thing is that he always believed in me, in my writing. I would write these little novels when I was 10 years old, and he would act like it was Hemingway when he read it, just like, oh, this is amazing. You're the best writer in the world. And so when I say for Papa, who always believed, that was a double reference, one to the fact that he believes in God, but always also that he always believed in me.
Right, right. So it's a sign that, almost like when we started talking about hell to non-believers, it's a sign that the affirmation approach is better both personally and you know, spiritually.
It's very effective, yes.
All right, it's our final minute, so let me just ask you this. What do you hope for readers who read something other than God?
I hope that it inspires all readers, regardless of their religious tradition, to see that becoming Catholic is the best, most amazing thing you could ever do. I love my Catholic faith. I am thrilled that I finally found the truth after all my years of wandering. And I just hope that every single person who reads the book gets a taste of the joy I have for my faith.
I'm Tony Rossi. You're listening to Christopher Close-Up. I've been talking with Jennifer Fulweiler about her book, Something Other Than God, How I Passionately Sought Happiness and Accidentally Found It. It's a wonderful read about Jennifer's life and how she moved from atheism to Catholicism, from non-belief to belief. And one of the great things about her story is that it's grounded in her real life. It's something we can all relate to. Jennifer wanted money, she wanted status, just like a lot of people do, but she found out there were things that were more important and that a sacrificial life, even though it's more challenging, can lead to more happiness. So pick up Something Other Than God by Jennifer Fulweiler. Her website is conversiondiary.com. And Jennifer, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Now, before we end today's show, here's a message the Christophers would like to share with you.
Quick bursts of prayer, like asking God for help in stressful situations, are probably already part of your daily life. But prayer on the run can't provide the solid foundation you need to respond faithfully to God's love. That's why the Christophers have prepared a news note called Lord, Teach Us to Pray. It's a step-by-step guide that will move you beyond quick, superficial prayers toward meaningful conversations with God. To request your free copy of Lord, Teach Us to Pray, send an email to radio@christophers.org. You can also call our toll-free number at 1-888-298-4050. That's 1-888-298-4050. We look forward to hearing from you.
In closing, I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in today, and I encourage you to visit our website at christophers.org to learn more about the Christophers and to download free literature and podcasts. When you're there, you can also find links to our blog and our Facebook and Twitter pages. And if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can send an email to radio@christophers.org. Our engineers for today's show are Josh Solomon and Brian Bonifacio, and I'm Tony Rossi, your host. Thanks again for joining us, and remember that it's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness.